Hello and welcome to the Sync Exchange podcast. I'm your host, Mark Fraser. On this edition, we sit down for a chat with the band Dirty Vegas's founder and lead vocalist, Stephen Smith. In our talk, Steve discusses the beginnings of Dirty Vegas and how the right sync, in this case, getting their music in a car commercial, led them from relative obscurity to 75,000 downloads a week, a huge global fan base, a Grammy, and of course, more syncs. I hope you enjoy it.
How are you doing today, Steve?
I'm very good, thanks, Mark. Yourself?
Not too bad. I want to thank you for taking the time, first of all, to come out and speak to us today. And
you're more than welcome.
I think the best way to start is from the beginning. Why don't you tell us about how Dirty Vegas came together, and then we can talk a little bit about you guys in the world of sync.
Yeah, sure. I'll keep it brief. First of all, my first steps into the music business was as a session musician, you know, in the studios and on the circuit in the UK, in London. Got to know a lot of producers, which then got me to know a lot of guys at the labels. The guys that we formed Dirty Vegas with were producers and DJs, and we decided to work together. Things went fantastically well. We was doing remixes and stuff. We started a writing session, and you know, the band was born around about 2001, and it's been pretty kind of exciting since then for us.
And sync has been a major part of everything that you guys have been doing right up until this day. I mean, there's one particular incident which we will talk about, but in a general sense, sync has just been a really important component of your career right up until the present moment.
Absolutely, without a doubt.
And that comes up in everything that you guys are doing. Licensing for television, film, advertising, whatever, is something that's part of the everyday that you guys do.
Yeah, I you know, we're very much aware that, you know, back in 2001, when we recorded our song called Days Go By, you know, it was made for DJs in clubs. You know, it was 8 or 9 minutes long. You know, it was purely for clubs. We pressed 1,500 vinyl off of it. Somewhere along the line, the offers came in from labels, so we made a radio edit. And, you know, I'm condensing this right down. We signed to a fantastic UK label called Parlophone. We shot an amazing video for the song.
Yeah.
The song was released, and the song did nothing. And it was kind of like, well, it's back to the studio and back to the drawing board as such. Then completely out of blue, around towards the end of 2001, after the release had happened and stuff, by some kind of strange twist of fate, a guy from Deutsche LA, the ad agency, was in the Netherlands on business, stayed up very late with jet lag, saw our video for the song, and, you know, made a note of it, and like, I'm going to track that song down. I think that's right for this new Mitsubishi spot that's coming up. We get the phone call, and it was, you know, look, we'd like to license the song Days Go By from the band Dirty Vegas, and there is, you know, there's a fee there, there's a huge budget for Mitsubishi for this new sports car that they're putting out. Our manager was like, guys, you know, the song's already been out and gone, so, you know, what do you think? We certainly had reservations about licensing our music at the time, because to be honest, Mark, you go back 10, 15 years ago, there was stigma from licensing tracks.
Absolutely.
Strangely enough,
right?
It was exactly that. You know, it wasn't a cool thing to do. You know, traditional avenues of radio and touring and exposure were acceptable, but licensing back then was, you know, wasn't exactly a cool thing to do. But we saw the reel from the director and what he was going to do with the song and how the whole thing was going to be shot. And we said, yeah, let's do this. I mean, little did we know that the song, you know, without any radio support, without the album even being released, you know, the song just went across American, you know, radio, and you know, people then started to kind of find out who we were. And, you know, I'm talking from 1,500 copies on vinyl to we started selling about 70,000 copies of it a week.
Yeah.
It was truly, truly mind-blowing. From the telephone call from Deutsche LA, which was in the November of 2011, by the April, we was performing live on the Jay Leno show. Bizarre.
It really became a phenomenon from that ad. It was really amazing. And the song came out of nowhere. I might have heard it. It certainly wasn't for public consumption. People didn't know about it at all.
Very, very small numbers of like specialist play. You know, it was completely unknown, certainly as far as America at the time, because, you know, music like that, you didn't have anything like that on American playlists. It was Nickelback, Britney Spears, Nelly. We was you know, we was up against that kind of stuff. And
exactly,
you know, to be one of the first kind of what you'd call electronic dance music, you know, on the American playlist was, you know, was very exciting for us, and it was also quite daunting as well.
And it's so interesting. I would imagine you think as a band, you know, you've done everything right in the traditional sense, right? Like, you know, you guys put together a solid album, you put together a really solid video, you did everything right, and nobody came to the party. And that must have been like, what, huh? You know, we know that our music is really great, and nobody cares.
You know? Yeah, I mean, you know, we did have some radio play in the UK, and everything looked great, but, you know, it just came and went. And honestly, for us, now looking back historically, that license was completely pivotal for our careers. Absolutely pivotal. I mean, we'd been touring, you know, driving up and down the UK, flying to Ibiza in Spain, and, you know, playing all the shows and certainly building our name, but nothing kind of changed the trajectory of, you know, the career path like that Mitsubishi spot.
So take me through how this happened, okay? So first of all, some guy from Deutsche LA hears this on a video when he's in a hotel room in Amsterdam or somewhere else in the Netherlands, and he's like, hey, this is cool, I'm going to make a mental note, get in touch with these guys' label. They get the music, they say, yes, we're going to use it in the ad. The deal was whatever it was in terms of the money, but what happened when the ad actually came out, and all of a sudden, boom, all this sort of stuff starts, you know, coming up in your lives. Like, how did you guys react to this? Sort of the next step here.
Well, we was definitely shell-shocked. You know, I remember our manager calling us. We was in the studio one day, and we'd kind of started booking some UK festivals for the summer, the spring and the summertime in 2002. And our manager said, look, I've just got off the phone from the label, and EMI was kind of, you know, part of the Capital Group. And our manager said, we're scrapping all of the UK and European stuff. You're going to America for the next 6 months. hello? What do you mean? He's just like, look, you know, you're going over there. We're going to start a promotional kind of tour across the US. Basically, what he said to us is the song has kind of, you know, kind of lit up the telephone lines at radio stations right across the States. They're like, I want to hear that song that's on that commercial, because this is before YouTube. This is,
right.
You know, this is certainly before streaming sites. So people's only access to that song was in their homes, you know, on their TVs, hearing it, and then, you know, wanting to hear it, you know, the full length version, you know, on the radio or any way they could lay their hands on it. So it was great to experience that old fashioned way of that promotion and getting people's access to it. It was, you know, people just couldn't hold their phones up and to the TV and get it on Shazam. There just wasn't any of that stuff around.
When it was first blowing up, you didn't really have anything. But I remember when it came out in America, I mean, all of a sudden, your song was everywhere. And it even went to the point Dave Chappelle did a parody, you know, using
the
commercial. You guys had, you were shipping for a while, 70,000 a week of it, which is mind-blowing. I mean, that's like some amazing numbers. You were touring. It probably led to more syncs, I would imagine, more potential gigs in that front too, right?
Well, yeah, you know, and you know, certainly in today's terms for an artist, you know, two of the biggest kind of income streams would be touring and licensing. For us, thankfully, that led to other licenses from songs across the record. I mean, and strangely enough, in that summer of 2002, we toured with Moby. You know, there was an artist that was, you know, that was in the dressing rooms with us, who had licensed every track from his Play album. So the example was already there for us. You know, we did a bunch of licenses off of our first record. And,
right,
you know, if I'm honest, thankfully, you know, when we release a new album and, you know, whether it's in their inbox or whether it's the physical copy that lands on their desk, still to this day, the licenses still come through for us. And, you know, everything from HBO to Lucasfilm to Sony, Heineken, we just did, from the new album, we just did a beer commercial in Germany and an O2 cell phone commercial, movies, documentaries. It's been amazing for us. There's nothing, certainly for us guys in Dirty Vegas, there's you know, there's nothing more kind of enjoyable than seeing your music kind of married to imagery and you know, a film or a key part in a, you know, in a TV show. We've always been fans of it. The stigma, and we certainly got some kind of bad remarks in the early days with the Mitsubishi spot. But, you know, if I went up to a young band now and just said to them, you know, would you put your music into a commercial? Absolutely, you know, I think everybody understands the importance of synchronization now.
I think that you're absolutely right. When you were looking at it in 2002, people had a totally different opinion. But today, if you look at just about any band, and not all bands will do it. Some bands still don't want to put their stuff in a commercial. But
yeah.
I would say most bands would say, yeah, definitely, please, get us the promotion. Get us the publicity. Help us out here. Because smart people realize, yeah, the paycheck is the paycheck. The revenue is great. You know, the money you're going to get is great from the sync itself. But really, where the payoff is what we're talking about right now. It can be a career-building event.
Absolutely. And it's not an exaggeration to say that we went from dark nightclubs in the UK to, you know, walking on stage and picking up a Grammy. That was the trajectory of what that song did.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's like, I want to say to everybody out there, okay, you're not necessarily going to get a Grammy by making sure, you know, I mean, it's like, look, you can't guarantee that you're going to get a Grammy. However,
no.
you can actually use, no matter how big your band is or how small your band is, use a sync for more than just like, oh, they paid me a few thousand dollars to use my song in a regional commercial, or they paid a few thousand dollars to put it in a TV show. No, that's where it really begins. That's where you can then start to employ, even if you don't have a label behind you, your social media, any videos that you have, giving people a place where they can go so that when they Shazam it or they look for it on TuneFind, there's going to be a place where they can go to buy it or stream it. Like, all of these sorts of things should be sort of lined up so that when there's the opportunity, then there's a bigger opportunity to promote yourself.
Yeah, there is. And you know, them avenues are there now. As you say, that the sync is the beginning. It could be, you know, a computer game. It could be at the end of, you know, a TV show like Girls that we licensed one of our songs to. And you can see the spikes afterwards. You know, I kind of tend to stay on being the musician side, but, you know, people that are around us and management and labels will tell you where then, you know, where the spike in interest comes from certain syncs. And, you know, it's an interesting kind of insight to see, you know, what that license actually does.
Right.
You know, that one was a huge thing. I don't think anybody could have predicted that, and probably wouldn't predict it again. But, you know, the other stuff that we've done around that, you know, you see, you know, licenses work. And actually, you know, if you get a license in a place first, it doesn't matter about territories anymore. You know, that song will cross boundaries and time zones and stuff. And, you know, we've definitely had requests on labels to sign a track in other countries because of exposure from other territories and other, you know, computer games and stuff. So, you know, there's just so many ways to go now.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. And I think that's the key, is that people really work on making sure that they exploit these opportunities, take advantage of them, and make it a part of everything that they do every single day. Not just the one sync. It's not just taking advantage of the one sync. It's integrating this into everything that you do, whether it's you yourself, if you're a DIY musician, or if it's working with your label and your publisher and your manager, whoever the people are around you, to make sure that when these syncs come up, they're taken full advantage of.
We get a license request, and like most bands, DJs, artists, you will look at the brand and evaluate whether what, first of all, is something that, you know, that you believe in, that's right for the band, you know. And certainly with a computer game, and there is some stuff that people that, you know, feel strongly about that they won't do. But, you know, if it's a cool TV
yeah.
show or a cool movie, it's such an important part now of the promotion and the exposure of a band. I wouldn't change a thing.
I think that's something that's so important for people to consider. Let's fast forward to now. Tell us a little bit about what your current projects are that you're working on now, and some of the current, you know, some of the sync opportunities and other things that have been happening as of late.
Well, we recently put out a new Dirty Vegas record called Photograph, and, you know, that came out towards the end of last year. Great reviews. We went out and headed and did some great shows, which was everything from like Singapore. We played Milan Fashion Week a couple of weeks ago. Yes, which was very nice. You know, so, I mean, as far as the shows go, you know, it's been great for us. Licenses, you know, there's been a few licenses off the new record already. So that's good. You know, you're always kind of pitching songs or, you know, hearing stuff from via the label. We're signed to a great label in Italy that are very proactive with licensing in Europe. Guys called Division, like Dirty Vegas, DV. You know, they're very kind of proactive. They understand that as an independent label, you know, nobody's really kind of making any, you know, any big money from sales of records anymore. So, and I guess this is true for any independent label. You know, you get one sync and you can make more money than, you know, the entire sales of an album.
Yeah.
You know, if you get that right one. So yeah, we're just, you know, constantly keeping stuff out for that. We're actually working on a new EP, which we want to put out towards the end of the year. Me and Paul, even earlier today, you know, kind of, I record a vocal, I send it to him in London, and we ping pong ideas back and forward. You know, we get asked to do stuff. It's, you know, remixes. You know, we thought it was going to be quiet last year, but the album came out. We was in India. We was in, you know, Thailand. So we went to Singapore. We played at the Formula One race party there. And, you know, it's kind of, it's nice. We did a bunch of acoustic sets as well, and I love to do those. So, you know, that's good. Yeah, so, you know, we've been very, very lucky, and I sincerely mean this. If it wasn't for that, you know, for that license, I mean, we'll never know now, but, you know, that paid, that it was just an integral part of our careers that, you know, we definitely never take for granted.
Well, this is, I think, something that, in terms of anybody who's out there who makes music or owns music or is a part of trying to get music to out to the general public, not just the music supervisors, is something you should really take to heart. That sync can really make your career. And with that, I'd really like to thank you, Steve, for taking the time out with us today.